to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
You're drowning and I throw you a life jacket. Would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns?
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome to Action Giants. I'm Tom Alley, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 2. NASDAQ Futures up 17. Dow Futures up 14. We're trying to sneak in with a victory last day of the year and make it a big year, even though there was a pandemic and all kinds of other stuff. Lou, you with us, buddy?
I am. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. How are you?
I'm doing okay.
All right.
Looks like it's going to be another glorious day here in Denver, nice and cloudless. The biggest, I may have mentioned this before, but the biggest change that I've adjusted to in terms of probably just overall living experience out here is the weather and the fact that it's sunny, you know, close to 300 days a year. And we don't get the kind of, November to February gloom that you guys get because of our altitude and dryness here.
What, are you turning into some weenie?
No, I just like to see the sun.
Well, you know, it's a thing. You know, just you don't have to take as much vitamin D at your age, you know.
Well, that's true. Although, as we now know, or it looks like we know, vitamin D is the way to beat this thing.
Actually, you know, that's sort of interesting. Is it people? I don't know. As you know, I'm not saying I read more about this than you do, but it's a. The stuff flies by me it appears how people jump to conclusion. I'm not saying you did, but the original story was, I believe, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is that if people got in the hospital with the COVID and you had a vitamin D deficiency, that your case was much more likely to turn serious. That doesn't mean
exactly what I've been reading.
Yeah, but that has been taken by some people. Just pound a bunch of vitamin D in, and it's like a preventative measure. It's not.
So here's what I'm seeing in the studies, the couple of studies that I've read and the summaries that I've read, and that is that the virus seems to hit vitamin D deficient populations.
Yes.
Much more heavily and much harder.
Right.
Than non vitamin D deficient populations, and that includes, you know, African Americans and others.
But, I mean, some people have taken it to the point where if you take the vitamin D, you won't catch it at all. And I'm saying that is not true.
No. It's not a preventative. It's an effect. It limits the effect of the virus, much like zinc.
Yes.
Zinc is a general virus inhibitor. And it seems to, if you're taking zinc, it seems to knock down the impact of the virus. But I don't think there's a quote natural cure on this, but at the same time, you know, populations that have more sun exposure and higher vitamin D loads in their system, and this includes most of the white population, and I don't know necessarily why that is, but populations with that seem to do much better with respect to the impact of the virus. So just, you know, but getting out in the sun, and obviously the sun is more intense here. Getting out in the sun for 15 to 20 minutes a day seems to be a big deal.
Well, I know my physician, as you take your blood test, I'm sure he knows that they end up with a vitamin D test in there. And virtually, what do you tell me, that every 35 and older male who lives north of Atlanta has a vitamin D problem in the wintertime if you don't take some?
That makes sense. So when I lived in Canada, they used to, this was obviously in the 60s, they used to refer to something as this particular substance as liquid sunshine. And if you, especially if you were a child, you were forced to take it, every day or every other day or whatever. You know what that is? Do you remember this from your childhood days?
The vitamin D? No, I don't know. Here was
cod.
Cod liver oil. Oh yeah. Well, that's actually supposed to be very good for you. It's not supposed to be all that appetizing, but
I know it tastes like hell. Maybe that's what makes it good for you, like kale.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's a natural, you know, it's a natural substance, very rich in vitamin D. And of course, Canada had huge fisheries off the east and west coast, especially off Newfoundland. And there was this big campaign when I was a kid, you know, take your cod liver oil, and you know, do you know what disease vitamin D prevents, or a vitamin D?
Well, vitamin C,
you catch if you have a vitamin D deficiency.
Well, vitamin C is rickets, right?
No, it's vitamin D. Vitamin C is, come on, you history of, for you guys, a history of the British.
It was a big problem in the British Navy.
Industry?
Yeah, it was a big problem in the British Navy, wasn't it?
It was. But not vitamin D deficiency. It was vitamin C deficiency. And what was the disease that they had?
I should know this, but I'm not going to get it.
Scurvy.
Scurvy. That was it. Yeah.
So we're rabbit holing now, and I'm sure the listeners are going crazy. There is a and I can't remember the name of the story, but there is a great science fiction novel written about the exploration of Mars, and one of the things that when they send all these people to Mars, they send them with vitamin packs to make up for dietary deficiencies and the fact that they're going to be eating all this processed food. So one day they have some kind of a problem with their systems, and they end up flooding their storage areas with pure oxygen. They get a leak in one of their tanks where they're generating oxygen, and it floods the storage area. And they're concerned about fire and explosion, so they ultimately deal with it after a day or two, because they have to be very careful about how they activate their hatches, and you know, nobody goes in there with any sparks or anything like that. So later on, about 6 months into this expedition, they all start coming down with a strange malady, a disease, and it's affecting all of them. It affects them at different levels and whatever, but they're all getting sick. And they think it's some kind of poison or some kind of organic element in the Martian soil or the atmosphere. They can't figure out what it is. And, you know, later, much, much, much later, after they start, people are actually fully debilitated, and you know, people get ready to die. One of them backs up to this episode where they flooded this storage area with oxygen, and realizes that would have effectively damaged all of the vitamin C in the vitamins that they had been taking.
Really?
It would have eliminated or chemically altered the vitamin C so that they were no longer getting the benefits of it. And what they all had was scurvy, but nobody recognized it, because there hadn't been cases of scurvy in you know, the industrialized world in centuries.
Well, ever since it didn't take you 3 months to get across the Atlantic.
Pardon me?
Ever since it didn't take you 3 months to get across the Atlantic.
Well, right, and ever since we understood that vitamin C was the element. I mean, the Brits, when it took 3 months to get across the Atlantic, even the Brits recognized that taking fruits and vegetables high in vitamin C was the key to staying healthy. That's why they were called limeys, because they carried limes on the vessels all the time for vitamin C supplement.
Really?
I thought that was a very creative way of introducing an age-old kind of travel disease into, or exploration disease into, a modern story, and also the fact that people wouldn't necessarily recognize it now if it developed.
Well, I have a question. Manny and I were talking on the way in. I was listening last night. Of course, I listened to two things last night. You know what? As I continue to do this show with my fine compatriots, you know, you get the feeling when people don't research a project like all the way and give you the whole story, almost, it makes me feel worse than if they just tell a lie. I was watching this thing about Notre Dame last night and the different coaches and the history of it and blah, 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 and Leahy quitting and all this other kind of stuff. And Parseghian, and they talked about Parseghian had the stress level, and he ended up retiring. And he never sniffed a head coaching job like ever again, pros or whatever, which is true. But you got to put an asterisk on that, I think, Lou. Didn't he have, talk about a guy with the worst life after he coached, didn't his son and daughter, a couple of his direct kids, have some genetic disease where they both died or something, and then the grandkids had yet another one or something, and they died? I mean, it was, and he just, all he did was raise money for those diseases for the rest of his life. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, he sat at home doing nothing. And you know, who knows if he actually wanted to coach again or not. I mean, but that you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy. I mean, Matty, why don't you check that? I mean, it was a genetic thing. I don't know if it was the same one that hit his kids and his grandkids, or it was two different ones, but it was really awful what happened to his family. And, you know, I mean, it was far beyond him whether he wanted to coach football again, I think. I mean, that's what I recall about this thing, because I liked him. I talked to him at a couple of deals, and he was a, you know, pretty straight guy. we almost killed him one day. But buddy of mine, in freshman year, we were told to put up the volleyball nets, right? So we come walking out with this huge pole right across the track, and he was running down doing a sprint with air. He almost banged at a pole and cut himself in half. he was not happy with us. Hey, what are you guys doing? Okay, well, sorry, coach.
we're setting a trap for you.
Yeah, we're setting a trap for you. Hey, what's going on with this this vote? Where if two guys vote for the, and everybody in the House of Congress and the Senate has to vote to say who won the election. Why is this these Republican guys doing this to these other Republicans? What am I missing here?
I think what you're starting to see right now is the post-Trump workout for who's going to be leading the party, either as a presidential candidate in 2024 or in terms of legislative agenda. And I think this is... These guys are doing this in order to force some attention on the fact that there was substantial voter fraud. There was substantial misconduct in the election, the presidential election, and they are catering to the new Gotterdammerung element of the Republican Party, which is you know, saying the election was stolen, and everybody that's not saying the election was stolen are a bunch of wimps, and we're never voting for them again, and so you know, Trump is our savior, you know. So there's an element of this here, which is what happens when you get a cult of personality developing. There's an element of this here, and these guys are playing to it. They are calculating that if they force this vote, And don't get me wrong, I don't have a problem with drawing attention to the voter fraud and the what I consider to be illegal conduct by a number of state courts. But they figure if they draw attention to this and force this thing out, they are going to score big brownie points with a segment of the Republican electorate that can then be leveraged or springboarded to allow, you know, put them in a much better position in 2024. I think that's what's going on, but at that stage, I mean, this is a result of a cult of a personality being built, and it's much like what I think would have happened with Obama had there been some kind of a lengthy end fight for him. There are elements in the party that look at this and say, we don't have to take it, we're going to do every single thing we can to raise the issue and try to force something to happen that everybody else I think recognizes is politically not going to happen.
Well, there's all kinds of different themes flying around, and one of them is it reminds me so much of the Bush-Gore situation, and you know, whatever, I'm a little suspicious of some of the late vote dumps in this thing as well from the mail stuff, but as to whether or not it's enough to eradicate 6 million vote margin, I'm saying not even close. But so I, you know, if the election was a lot closer, I'd be more concerned, but I'm not. I mean, because I don't think it was all that close, but the Bush-Gore thing, once what's her name Harris declared a winner, the people who go sniping after Americans don't like people that do that. I mean, right now, enough people have said, "Hey, this thing was Biden won fair and square, and or fair and square enough." We don't want to be bothered with it anymore. We don't want to be screwing around a year from now as to who the hell won. Same thing with Bush. I mean, we could still be fighting that thing. That was way closer than this, right?
Well, we fought Bush. There was a substantial element in the Democratic press and the Democratic Party that fought Bush v. Gore all the way to the end of Bush's second term. I mean, Bush was. There were a whole bunch of people that teed up, major Democratic spokespeople and party people who said Bush was not the president, and that went on for almost his entire first term, and some of it into his second. So I can't, in terms of understanding it, I understand it. I don't think it's right, but I understand it. The issue with that these guys are exploiting is that there was clear misconduct, I think, on the part of, for example, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, in terms of allowing their state government to basically rewrite the Constitution illegally, and I don't think there's any question about that. I mean, that's when that case went forward, it looked like a winner to me, and so that's why you've got people attacking, you know, John Roberts and a few other folks on the Supreme Court, because they did not push that Pennsylvania Supreme Court decision all the way to the wall. There are clear indications of problems. The elements that, but you know, this is politics, and so you have to understand at some point that the law or what you suspect happened, unless you can come up with really, really, really clear evidence of it, and we have it so far. They don't have the time to do so. Unless you come up with really clear evidence, you're not gonna convince a federal court judge, to overturn what looks to be a legitimate election, and that's what's playing out right now. There's a substantial number of people who are opposed to Biden or opposed to the Democrats or pro-Trump, who say we expect you to take this all the way to the wall. We know, and I put the word "know" in quotation marks. We know that there were illegalities and irregularities that should be explored. And until you can explore that, you shouldn't seat Joe Biden.
Well, you see a lot of maneuvering. I mean, what is McConnell, this thing with this $2,000 check? Now, I don't think it's going to fly, but it's interesting that McConnell just got reelected, right? So he's in for 6 years. It remains to be seen whether he's the head of the Senate. I suspect he probably still will be. But he's taken this all upon himself. He's allowing every Republican who needs to, especially the two guys in Georgia, or a guy and a lady in Georgia, to eventually come out in favor of the $2,000, because it looks like you're giving people money for nothing. And yet, it's not going to happen. But yet everybody in his party gets to trumpet it. So it's a classic, I'll take the heat for you. You guys do what you have to do. I mean, am I wrong here or not?
I'm not really clear as to how coherent this strategy is. Because you've got the president, you know, basically saying, "Look, I'm gonna sign this bill, but I want." My understanding is we're gonna increase the amount to $2,000, which is the amount I think you ought to be getting. And the $600 is ridiculous. I agree. He could have beaten a much louder drum and said the idea that of a $900 billion relief bill, less than $200 billion is actually payments to the American people. I think he should have beaten that, you know, a lot more loudly, but for whatever reason his people don't take what I consider to be the obvious direction on these things.
No, they don't.
I think McConnell is just saying, look, this is, you know, I'm not going to slug it out. This is not a hill I want to die on. I'm not going to slug it out with the people within my own party on this thing. The Democrats are always going to vote in favor of printing money. We're not going to. We're going to exercise some fiscal restraint here. I don't understand why the Republicans are not leading the charge on this by saying $600 is a pittance and it's a joke. And you know, given the state of the economy and the damage that's been done to it, If we're gonna make some monetary relief, let's make some real monetary relief, and let's not be sending, for example, $10 million to Pakistan for to teach gender equality programs in the Pakistani schools. Speaking of which, I wonder if there's been going to be research on exactly who that money is going to in Pakistan.
I was going to say, you know that there's a couple of sleazeballs, whether they're Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. They're going to follow that money, and 2 to 3 million of it is going to come back to somebody along the way.
I assumed that there was some very wealthy Pakistani donor in the United States who had kicked some money into somebody's campaign, and has family in Pakistan that is trying to, or a business in Pakistan involved in gender equality, and that money is going to go directly to either his family or friends of his, that or hers, and I just assume that's what it is. That's such a ridiculous thing to spend money on.
Well, Lou, this is my biggest beef against the.
But this bill, Chief, is riddled with stuff like this.
Well, sure it is. One of our listeners calculated if you took all the pork out of it, earmarks, whatever you want to call them, you could send every American an $18,000 check.
Yes. I don't think that's an unfair calculation. So again, I don't understand why if you're gonna die on this hill of we're not gonna increase the dollar amount, if you're gonna die on this hill, why not die at least taking down as many of these earmarks and as much of this pork as you can, and it's really a classic example in political dynamics, which is our government is less of a regulatory agency working for the public welfare than it is just a cash distribution system that just throws money out to people in exchange for their votes.
One of my themes for the show, and you probably obviously picked up on it, but this is why my biggest bitch, totally, to lack of a first South Side term, on both sides of the aisle, is that no matter how much some liberal goes nuts against the right, or no matter how much I run into some people on the South Side that are so right, it's scary. No matter how much they bitch, nobody will call out anybody for the game that really is the game in Washington. And the whole play to me, or the tableau, for those of Maddie, what's a tableau?
I don't know what a tableau is.
It's a play within a play. Right, Lou? I think this whole thing in Washington is nothing but a tableau. Where it reminds me of the John Wayne movie where he went and was fighting the big Swede guy and he got his butt kicked. But he did it just for diversion so the other guys could go do something. All this stuff we're arguing about is a diversion. Because neither side will ever call the other side out and the game that's really going on and that's stealing everybody's money.
And let's put it even more directly, Chief. This is precisely what Donald Trump was elected to stop.
Right, exactly right.
This is precisely why Donald Trump got elected.
A significant
percentage of the electorate looked up and said, our government is screwing people and it's not helpful, and it's an insider game, and we are going to elect an outsider who is a chaos manager and a bomb thrower. We're going to put him in there and let him run amok. And I mean, that's, you and I have talked about this, the great superpower Donald Trump has had, and this is what he's, as far as I could tell, this is what he was elected for. His superpower is exposing all this, is getting all this, raising all kinds of cane and all kinds of hell, and getting people to come out and have to say, literally, this, we're looking for an excuse to throw money at our various political interests, and that's what we're going to do. And it's clear that they're saying it. They say it unabashedly, or they're forced to say it unabashedly, and this is why Donald Trump gets elected, and this is one of the reasons why that portion of the Republican Party that is diehard on this is being catered to by these Republican
what they refuse to understand
who are going to force this vote.
What they refuse to understand, Lou, and by the way, I'm the people who did that. You know who you sound like? Your buddy Newt.
In what respect? I don't follow Gingrich.
Newt came out and right after the election, and he said this is nothing more than a continuation of the Obama phenomenon. He goes, people can't stand what's going on in Washington, so they elected a guy essentially from the outside who is articulate, young, had only been in the Senate, a year? And they thought he wasn't co-opted yet, and it turns out he was. And so they went, now this time they went somebody directly, totally from the outside, who they felt was not co-opted, and, you know, we'll see. Well, it turns out that Trump got co-opted as quick as anybody. And the people on the right who are fighting this battle, I absolutely sympathize with them in the sense that the idea of somebody from the outside raising hell and kicking people out of there. Lou, I'm so for, whatever. I'd start contributing tomorrow to that person. He just wasn't the guy. He got co-opted faster than Obama. His kids got co-opted. I mean, and look at the pardons. I mean, they took the place to be their advantage as well. Can't we find anybody who can hang in there for 4 years and not get co-opted?
I mean, our system doesn't breed for that, number one. Number two, if he wanted to get something done, and again, his, you know, I actually think he wasn't necessarily co-opted. I think the structure around him did what it does. He worked to unravel that structure, to disentangle it as much as he could. But, you know, there are certain things, if you're the president, you can't have your finger in every pie. There were certain things he was very interested in, certain things he was able to do directly through executive orders. But if he wanted to work through the legislature, his hands are tied, and to the extent that he's got to cut deals, or their deals have to be cut to get these people to move.
I don't disagree. We got to go to break, Lou. When we come back, I have a little bit of a rebuttal to that. But SP Futures now down 1.25. NASDAQ Futures up 12. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Well, not back Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Will Michaels, Mr. Matt Weber. Happy New Year to everybody, especially to Lou, especially to Maddie Weber, the rest of the people who contribute to the show, and the listeners. S&P futures down 1.25, NASDAQ futures up 11, been very slow this week. We had a little bit of rally in the metals yesterday, and the market keeps creeping up as the Fed keeps doing their thing. Dow's up 13 points. Over in Europe, we've got down, but not that much. DAX down 42.3%. FTSE's actually down 1%. 73 points. CAC around down 9, call that 0.2%. FTSE's been a little more volatile than the rest. I think a lot of that has to do with the Brexit and all the other stuff going on over there. Nikkei down 123, that's 0.5%. Shanghai up 58, 1.7%. They claim factory activity expanded in December, so Chinese stocks are to the moon here, especially in Shanghai. Hang Seng up 84, that's only 0.3%. They're not going with it as much. Bonds unchanged at 0.92. The Bund minus 0.57. You would think if Europe is doing so great that their market's telling you almost at all-time highs that that they would have an interest rate that would be above zero. But so something scarily not matching up here. Japan positive 0.02%. Oil down 42 cents, 47.98. Brent down 51 cents, 51.12. Natural gas up 8 cents, but still only 2.50. That's 50 cents cheaper than it was a couple of months ago, and we thought the winter was going to be worse. Our Bob is unchanged at $1.40. We got gold up 360 to 1897, tantalizing the close to that 1900 number. Silver up a whole 2 cents, 2660. Copper down 2 cents, 352. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're nice and quiet on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. So if you are working today, enjoy a nice quiet commute. Absolutely no delays, accidents, road construction, or anything to speak of this morning. Nice and quiet out there. Weather today, we'll see some sunshine today, but cold temperatures, a high of just 31. Right now it's overcast and 24, going up to a mostly sunny 31. For our Phoenix listeners, cloudy today, but a high of 61. Right now, it is partly cloudy and 39. In sports, quiet night last night for the professionals, in the NBA at least. Bulls and Suns were both off. They return to action today. The Bulls have an afternoon game at Washington. That's a 4 p.m. Chicago time tip-off against the Wizards. Suns were off. They're at Utah tonight. That's a 6 p.m. Arizona time tip. College hoops, Notre Dame lost to Virginia 66-57. And DePaul was blown out by UConn 82-61. Chief.
Lou, I mean, I was mentioning yesterday, it was yesterday. It wasn't yesterday, it was Tuesday, it was Jeff was in. I mean, the issues with the pensions in Illinois. I mean, people are leaving the state right and left, and you can all point it to the budget stuff, and you can point it to that. And now we have the issues in Washington. We have this 5,500-page bill that came out of nowhere, and like you say, there's 600 million, and Republicans are always going to be, I'm not agreeing with the Democrats on this, but the Republicans are always going to be saving money on what they give to individuals, but never save money on what they give to a corporation. I mean, I don't know where that came out with the Republicans, but boy, oh boy, they'll get, I mean, you're not going to give, I'm not saying you should give people more because you're just printing the money, but you're not going to give even a $1,000 check, and yet you're going to give $15 billion to the airlines. So you can pay people there. What is there a limit to how much you're going to pay people? Are we going to pay the CEOs like $1 million a year or $600,000 because we're giving them the money to do? I mean, what are we doing? But you look at this. There are ways. I mean, Jeff said you couldn't deal with the pension problem, and I said I could deal with it. I don't want to. I'm not that kind of a person. But I know how you'd have to do it, and I don't want to do it. And I know how in Washington. How you'd have to deal with, because I think at this point, Lou, the only way you can tell somebody the truth especially if you're a governor, if you're a president, you need to do it yourself. I mean, and Trump, the idea of tweeting when you're sitting on the can is not my idea of telling the truth. I mean, you need to have a fireside chat, for lack of a better term, like Roosevelt. Or, I mean, Hitler got his, not comparing myself or our people to Hitler, but in some ways, in marketing, he was a genius. He made use of radio roughly the same time Roosevelt did, and he told his own story. I mean, if Trump really cared.
We had a presidential candidate who did that. Do you remember him?
Was Roosevelt?
No. Candidate. More recently.
Yeah, I do. Which one was it? I do remember.
Ross Perot.
Yeah.
Ross Perot sat down in his campaign in 1992, did a series of talks, very straightforward discussions. They were campaign ads, but they were not, 30-second sound bites, where he said, look, here's the national debt. Here's our revenue coming in. You could see the divergence. The impact of the national debt is going to be X in 30 years. And we are not, unless we get our arms around it, it's going to limit our ability to solve any problems. And he had a series of those commercials.
And look how well
he
did.
It's one of the reasons why he cost George Bush the election.
Yeah, he did real well. But what I'm saying, Lou, is this 5,000-page bill, somebody somewhere, and it won't be in our lifetime, but somebody somewhere has to come out and with that thing on a desk and say, here's the bill they want me to sign. And next to it, there should be something that's 500 pages. And say, this is what I'm going to sign. Now, what about the 4,500 pages? I'm just going to take every 50th page or 100th page because I don't want to bore the population too much. Let's see. On page 4,500, here's a bridge to nowhere in this district in Georgia. By the way, Matty Weber is the representative down there. And Matty Weber just got a $10,000 check from the guys building the bridge. I'm not signing that. But you need, people have some kind of a view of what's going on, but they don't really know. You have to be willing to call people out.
I don't think our political establishment is capable or willing to do that. And this goes back to, we had one of our discussions a couple of months ago that Maddie entitled Whiteboard when we were talking about dealing with the virus. And I said exactly the same thing that you're saying with respect to this fiscal or this fiscal relief bill. I said, if I don't understand why, but the president's people are not having him get a whiteboard and a marker and just say, okay, here are the curves. Here are what the graphs look like. Here's what the infection rate looks like. Here are the test results. Here's what these things look like historically. Here's what our test results look like now. Here's what we expect to happen. And put that stuff up there and explain to people, this is how I see this thing as your president, the elected leader of the country. This is how I see this developing. Here's what my scientists are telling me. And he, as the president, this is the call that I think I have to make on this. And here is the call that I think the state governor should be making on this. But in terms, there was never that kind of explanation, and there won't be for this.
Well, I think
it comes down to, and I'm sorry to say this, but I've said it before. I think it comes down to the fact that the political operatives who are advising our candidates and our elected officials believe the American people are too stupid and have too much attention deficit disorder to follow an extended argument or an extended discussion about how their money is being spent.
Lou, I think I'm much more sinister in this. I think you're a little too highbrow. I think it comes down to, I can disagree with you about whatever, the Pfizer vaccine, but I will never say. And the reason why Mr. Michaels feels this way is because in his left pocket of his fat behind, he's got a huge check from Pfizer. They will never say that because in my pocket of my fat behind, I got a check from AstraZeneca. I mean, nobody will go down that road because they're all on the road.
Well, now we're back to what got President Trump elected.
Yeah.
And the recognition of that fact is what got President Trump elected.
Correct.
I think that's a possibility. I think that you know, everybody could be in this thing to such an extent that we're, it's impossible to reform it, because but in reality, what gets you elected is not the votes of the of your constituents, but the donated money from, you know, people who are interested in you. And
Lou,
I must say, based on what I saw in this last election, there's some truth to that.
Lou, I'm gonna lob this one out at you. I really want the American system to. I mean, we are an incredible light on history, I believe. And the light is starting to fade in my mind. Not just because I'm getting older, but we have young people. This is not just a shot at, that don't understand the process. They don't understand how incredibly different it is for even the most guilty among us to get somebody to defend them and actually have a trial, even though you know the guy's guilty. That sets us apart from 99% of all the people that have ever lived on this earth, right? I mean, it is so important, and I see young people, what do you mean, the guy's guilty, screw it, why do we spend money and time, and why would anybody ever defend him? And I'm like, what are you talking about, why would anybody ever defend him? Because he gets a defense. But I don't see, I mean, in the state I don't see anybody here in Illinois, let me finish my thought. I honestly believe that we need a constitutional convention on all three levels, state, city, and government. You can't have Maddie Weber going against Joe Jamoke in Rhode Island, and nobody even knows where the hell the district is, and $90 bazillion coming in from people that don't even live there. I mean, there's something wrong with that, I think. I mean, I don't know how to fix it necessarily, but maybe somebody else at the convention will have an idea. But this thing in Illinois, I mean, Lou, the state, in deference to you attorneys, I read a thing on the state of Illinois has in there, I believe the words are the nobody's pension can be diminished. Is that the word diminished? I believe.
Yeah, it was a backdoor deal cut in, I think, your 1972
convention,
constitutional convention.
Yeah. But
and nobody paid attention to it.
Right, but now we're reaching the point where it's killing the state and the things like people getting. Well, anyway, I read this thing, two lawyers looking at it. And one guy said that the clause was airtight, which, by the way, the courts have ruled that guy's correct. And the other guy said the clause is useless because it doesn't address who has to pay. It's not like it's a state law that the Evergreen Park can't diminish somebody's pension, because there's no obligation for the state to pay it. It's an interesting law. It's like me walking out to the playground and said, nobody here should get hurt, and then walking away. Oh, okay. I mean, what does that do to the world? Or we shouldn't die anymore, or we shouldn't have sex with somebody that we're not married to. Well, that's interesting, but, you know, it's not going to get anywhere. So, I mean, I think we need to address some of this stuff, Lou, before it kills us. I mean, it never said that if you're a sleazebag and you get two pensions, well, not a sleazebag, because I guess it's legal to do it, or if somehow or another you get your pension is you know, twice as much as you ever got paid. We can't even discipline the fraud because people have taken. But that has to end, Lou. The state is losing people by the moment. I mean, and you and I think agree on this. It comes down to this: we're so bent on the bureaucracy making these laws. What do these people do all day? I mean, we have people here in the city that are making laws about if you have an open door in your saloon, how many feet inside your table can be and still be considered outside. We have people we're paying to do that, Lou, which I fire them tomorrow. And yet, we're so far behind in our inoculations that the rate we're going to take us 10 years to vaccine people. So why aren't those people doing something useful, like getting in a car with vaccines in a trunk and going to nursing home? But no, we have to wait until we cut the deal with Walgreens or CVS, because somebody obviously is getting an envelope stuck in their back pocket from Walgreens and CVS. I mean, we are so inefficient. We can't do anything right now, Lou. Is it just because the bureaucracy has to get paid or their home, or what are they doing? I mean, we should be three times the vaccines now, and we're not. But this is every time. This is Hurricane Katrina. It's the river that flooded. Every single time our bureaucracy is failing us. It failed Trump. It failed George Bush. It failed Obama. I mean, and yet we can't shake things up.
Yeah, I think this is an element of the political system that we've created, which is we do not ask for accountability in our state bureaucracy. I mean, I don't think anybody, to quote my favorite example of Democrat ineptitude on mass projects, I don't think anybody got fired as a result of that incompetent rollout of Obamacare.
No.
And the failure of that. I mean, people should have lost their jobs over that.
Well, Michelle Obama picked the computer company. She should have lost her first woman status or whatever. I mean, nothing happened there.
I mean, Sebelius and the rest of them that were all involved in that should have been summarily fired. I mean, this is one of the things that happened with Obama when people didn't do what he wanted, he fired him. You know, and it took him longer than he wanted, but he forced him out or he fired him. And I understand, you know, that mentality. I didn't agree with all of his choices, but it's kind of a refreshing thing that when somebody doesn't do what you want, it isn't just a very quiet, you know, resignation. It was an actual, you're out of here and I don't like what you're doing and you're gone. Again, I don't agree with all of it, but that kind of focus and that kind of direct action is something that's basically missing out of our political culture. We don't fire people for incompetence or malfeasance, or rarely. Occasionally we force them out, but even when we force them out, our culture allows for so many second chances that these folks can come right back in.
Lou, I'm going to say that, and Maddie has a better memory of me these days.
I mean, let me just go to the present situation. I mean, there is video of Joe Biden in 1988 just flat out lying shamelessly and in a total jerk style, butthole style, if I can use that term, about his college record and how smart he was, how high his IQ was, and how well he placed in his class. And on top of that, he basically steals an entire speech about being the son of a Welsh miner. And yet, there was no accountability for that. There was no fallback, for that. There was no fallout on him, as a result of that. I mean, he should have disappeared forever because he told us who he was in that speech and in that little interaction. And yet, it didn't work that way. Teddy Kennedy kills somebody, is lionized and gets away with it, basically, is lionized, by the Senate on his demise. We have all kinds of incidents of this kind of conduct where people do terrible things that should permanently disqualify them from office or from any kind of position in our leadership, and yet they are allowed to come back.
Well, I mean,
that's our political culture.
Well, we have a situation with, I mean, George Bush. I actually kind of like the guy. Of all the recent presidents, if I was going to have a beer with one guy, it'd probably be George Bush. But I mean, he was able to turn off his entire life before age 40. I mean, how the hell did he get to do that, Lou?
I wasn't aware that he had a DUI.
No, I think he was into a bunch of stuff, but his whole war record, he was in the National Guard, and basically he had all the flights that he said he'd flown in the National Guard, they found out he really didn't, and I mean, somebody dug into
it. I don't know if my recollection is that was never proven, and my take on Bush is, quite frankly, flying that aircraft that he was flying was a hell of a lot more dangerous than the average tour in Vietnam for a lot of guys.
Well, but I'm saying, I mean, some people get to turn off areas of their life, some people don't. Some people, get to, Gary Hart as his one tryst.
And he's out.
And other people get to, other people they know they're nailing people right and left. It doesn't bother them. I mean, to me, how this all works down or how either somebody sets you up or doesn't. I mean, I know you probably don't like the guy, and I'm not so sure I like him either, as a person. Matter of fact, I probably don't. I'm going to say that one of the potentially best leaders we could have had, the Roosevelt of our time, the traitor to his class, would have been Eliot Spitzer. And we couldn't wait to make sure that guy never got near. Now, who was behind that, Lou? Who was behind
that? He was a bad guy.
I just, I didn't say that I wanted to be sitting there and drive with him to Seattle, but I'm saying he's, there's a guy who knew where all the bodies were buried. And people on the trading floor couldn't stand him, right? Because he went after the New York Stock Exchange specialists and all that stuff, which, by the way, somebody should have. Because those guys, I mean, they obeyed the rules when they felt like it, you know. And anybody who traded on a CBOE knew that those guys were not all, because some were actually pretty straight, but some weren't. And, you know.
But Spitzer was not a crusader. Because he wasn't doing it for some higher good. He was doing it for the benefit of Elliot Spitzer.
Well, whatever. Every politician does stuff for their benefit of themselves. But my point, Lou, is the way he was set up. I was sitting, I don't know Elliot Spitzer, but I was sitting in, after a big workout, we're in the bar up at the Buckingham Club, and there's all these traders in there, and they couldn't, when he was indicted, these guys were buying shots. They were so happy. They couldn't stand the guy because he came after our industry, right? But the things he came after legitimately needed to go after, I think. But the fact is that the rest of the guys didn't feel that way. So, of course, they, hey, what do you think, Chief? And I said, I'll tell you what. I think you guys are really off base. I said, don't ever quote me as liking the guy. I wouldn't. Never. I mean, the idea that he has to have hookers when he's married, I mean, you know, that's not me. You know that. But the point is the way they set the guy up. I said, you have to understand that could have been you. And they go, what do you mean? How could it have been me? I said, well, I've known you forever. You're a pretty big swinging bleep, right? Oh, yeah, yeah. I said, okay, so you decide the wife wants the house painted and it's going to cost you $8,000 and the guy wants to get paid cash. You don't think for a second there's anything wrong with you going to the bank and getting $8,000, is there? Well, no. Why would there be? I said, you know, I happen to know you go to Vegas twice a year, and I'm not thinking you're going there with $200 in your ATM card. I'm going to say you're going with $6,000. Well, you may be light on that one, Chief. Okay, so now you went to the bank and got another $6,000. Well, yeah. I said, well, Elliot Spitzer's got more money than you, like way more. And he took some money out for cash. Who knows what he was doing with it? These guys said, oh, we want to make sure that Elliot Spitzer isn't being, isn't being chased after by some mob guy and he has to pay him off. We're going to put a tap on his phone. I said, would you think that you deserve a tap on your phone? Oh, bleep no. Nobody's putting a tap on my phone. They did him. And
well,
he did.
He's the governor of New York.
I'm just saying.
I don't have a problem with going after an elected official like that.
They went after him. If they would have known, had an inkling that he was bringing girls across the border, I'm with you, Lou. But they didn't. They did it to allegedly protect him because they thought he was being blackmailed because he took some cash out. The guy's the one of the wealthiest man. His family had nothing but dough. He took out like $5,000 or $6,000. He never was over to $10,000. They just used that as an excuse to put a tap on his phone. There have been years probably, Lou, where they could have done that with you when you flew overseas and stuff and you said, I better bring some cash with me. They could have used the same excuse for you.
And I never used cash for... Well, first of all, I never traveled with large amounts of cash because I was usually going into Russia. But secondly, an elected official who has this kind of irregularity in his, in his bank statements or whatever, I get it. I mean, it's the same thing that with them going after the Hastert. You know, I mean that Dennis Hastert was nailed on that.
Dennis Hastert,
same kind of deal.
Dennis Hastert was put in office by some people that knew he had a weakness and they had something on him, and somehow after he was out, they decided they needed to go after him. And I, to this day, Lou, I can't figure out why, after all that time, they decided they had to go after him.
I can't figure it out either. But I mean, this is the same kind of process that is playing out. I'm not going to defend Elliot Spitzer being
me neither.
Picked up
me neither.
as a governor on some kind of, you know, close look at his finances that discovers that he's basically violating all kinds of federal statutes by his predilection for a particular hooker.
I never said I liked the guy. What I said was most people that deal in cash, and guys on the exchange used to. They like to go to Vegas, they like to do stuff. The thought of them having a phone tap put on them because they went to Vegas four times in 1 year is so far away from what could happen to them, but they don't care if something happens to somebody else. You have, you
all
have
right,
to.
Well, this comes. I understand what you're saying. This goes back to the discussion you and I have had before about the regulatory state, and the more regulations you have, the more likely somebody is violating one of those regulations, and the more likely whether they get caught violating those regulations becomes a matter of discretion for a federal prosecutor. In other words, whether the government drops on your head is simply the result of some U.S. attorney looking at your records and making a decision, yeah, I don't like this guy, or no, I'm not going to waste my time on it. And that's the really scary part about government arbitrariness. That's arbitrariness in action, because this guy's not elected by anybody. He's a member of the executive branch. He's only accountable to his supervisor and maybe the attorney general if the situation gets bad enough. But he or she on a day-to-day basis is making a decision of, I don't like the way this guy looks. There's got to be something here I can find. Let's go after him. And that's the real danger of the kind of regulatory state that Obama exploited, Trump exploited, you know, and I think the Biden people are going to exploit big time.
Lou, I got a legal question. We have a minute and a half. How does something like, from what I understand, and again, I'm not privy to the case, I was on the jury, but years ago they decided, they, whoever the hell the theys are, that if you take or deposit more than $10,000 in cash, that the bank, and who knows where this has gone since then, but, and I know they track every penny, but the idea was the bank would have to file a report if somebody did over $10,000, right?
Correct.
Okay, so Denny Hastert, knowing this, and maybe other people, they always do $9,000. Okay? Since when does it become a crime for you to do $9,000 3 days in a row and avoid a report? But now it appears that avoiding a something that the bank does, you causing the bank to avoid what they're doing, how does that become a crime to you? How does that become a law that's a felony to avoid a bank reporting requirement?
Yeah, well, it's not the actual depositing $9,000 that's a felony. It's the circumvention of the banking law that's the felony, and that's at that point you get in some very dangerous constitutional areas as to whether your conduct.
But the law never applied to you. It never said you can't deposit more than $10,000. It said the bank has to make a report if you do. So how does depositing under that become a violation?
It's not, the depositing under it is not a violation. The depositing under it, though, is a trigger for or evidence of other misconduct that becomes a target for an investigator.
But I mean, if you did $1,000 a week, why can't somebody say to you, Lou, you should have taken out $11,000 twice or three times, four times, my math's bad. And by the way, it should have been reported. We're going to come after you.
It shouldn't. The issue is not the reporting or lack of reporting. That's not what you're going to get charged with. What they're going to do is they're going to use that deposit evidence or that withdrawal evidence as that pattern as evidence that you are engaged in some other kind of conduct that does violate a law.
But as somebody who's in a business, PTI. When they came after Deutsche Bank for this alleged all this money laundering, every time somebody did what they were supposed to did something, this amount of money changed hands, Deutsche Bank filled out the report and sent it to those people that they're supposed to send it to. And years later, somebody concluded that because they had filled out all these reports, they were pandering to money launderers. No, they weren't. They were reporting exactly what they were supposed to do, Lou. How does Deutsche Bank become a victim here? Not that I like Deutsche Bank at all, but somebody in the bureaucracy is supposed to take these reports and say, "Looks to me like Matt Weber is doing some weird stuff." It's up to us to go after him. But they don't go after anybody. They kick it back to the bank. That you somehow should go after these people. When did that all start?
I think you've got some really severe constitutional issues there in terms of self-incrimination. And this, by the way, was something that was actually introduced in federal regulations with respect to federal contractors, is that they were expected to self-report and self-identify all areas of federal law that they might be violating before they could get a contract. And somebody pointed out, hey, that's a violation of the self-incrimination provisions of the Fifth Amendment. And you can't do that. And you would have thought somebody should have picked that up right out of the gate.
Yeah.
Our people don't think that way.
Lou, Happy New Year, buddy. Let's have a good one in 2021. Let's have no virus for anybody, for God's sake, and get those vaccines out there. Let's hope for a better one. Anyway, you take care of yourself. SP Futures down 50 cents. NASDAQ Futures up 12. It looks like a snorer today. We'll see. We'll be right back with Mr. Dan Janitas.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, the board. SP Futures down 1.25, and NASDAQ Futures up 12. And by the way, when I say Happy New Year to our listeners, I mean it because you guys have helped us out and helped me out constantly as I wander off into areas. And one of our listeners sent in, I would never have guessed his name. The Niemann-Pick disease is what Parsegian's family was afflicted with, Manny?
Never heard of it.
No, but it's a... Lyso something disease. I can't pronounce it, but thank you. And it was a bad dude. Dan, how are you, buddy? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Is next year going to be? Well, I guess this year was easy to trade if you just bought and hold. If you didn't do that, I guess you were kind of struggling. if you thought you wanted to be protected, maybe you didn't have to be, except for a few stocks. Every once in a while, they don't like one, or one of these ones that comes out and everybody loves it. They might not love it 2 days later, but what do you think is going to happen in 2021? Is these interest rates are creeping just a little bit, but yet the worldwide rates aren't going anywhere. I mean, the Germans, you can't move the thing off minus 0.57 with a derrick. You can't move it. Same way with Japan, they're like flat. You hear people talking about inflation. You hear somebody other than you and me talking about 25% money supply, but it hasn't reached herd mentality yet, where anybody's worried. What do you think happens here?
Yeah, I think in the short run, people are focused on the new administration coming in. They're focused on what's going on with the vaccines, and I think if you look beyond that, looking at this past year, we've kind of done some analysis, and there's been a big discrepancy, obviously, between growth and value. Just using the Russell Index year to date, which is basically 2020. The index is up 20%. If you look at the growth part of that index, the Russell 2000 growth, it's up 34%. And if you look at the Russell 2000 value during the same period, it's only up 2.3%. So depending on where you were, we tend to be balanced when it comes to equities. So we like growth at a reasonable price. So if you were more of a value manager, this obviously would not have been a good year for you. Going into the new year, I believe we're going to see some of the cyclical names come back. We're going to see a little bit better performance in some of those areas as the economy grows, as we see more confidence in both the consumer side, which has really lagged, and as well as the manufacturing and energy and some of the names that have really gotten hit hard. So looking at, kind of going a little deeper and looking at some numbers, we also look at the high yield index. It was up about 6% this year, the high yield bond index. And the high yield bond index is heavily weighted in consumer names, consumer cyclicals and consumer non-cyclicals, as well as communication and energy. So those parts of the market have room to move still. So the names that have been out in front, and when you've heard it in the media recently, the names that have been out in front all year, those, quote, if you will, stay-at-home stocks, have kind of losing some of their fuzz. I mean, they're losing some of their momentum, if you will. They're kind of, in these last few weeks, they're not running up quite as much. And I think that's because in 2021, we're going to see the performance of these stocks is already built into the market. And how much further do we have to go in terms of the stay-at-home names, if you will, the tech names, probably will continue to run. But I think what the names that are going to be better buys in 2021 are going to be in those sectors, the consumer sectors, both consumer cyclical and consumer non-cyclical. I think communications, and I also think energy. And energy has, I think the thought is that in the energy sector, if you will, we're going to be moving more towards solar and other, alternative renewables. We believe it's too soon. Having been a high-yield manager for 35 years, I know the energy sector pretty well. One name that we had looked at, and I still think it has value, it's another preferred stock, Nabors Energy, and the ticker symbol is NBRPRA, and it's trading about 8.890, in the high eights. I think it's a buy if it trades below a dollar price of 8. It has a nice fat yield. You're going to get a double-digit dividend yield on that one. And, you got to watch it. It's not necessarily going to be a name you hold, permanent hold, but I think for the next year it's going to be a good hold. And then going out on a limb, some of the names that went through Chapter 11, and you don't really hear about this much in the press, but some of the companies that were energy companies that I think still have momentum in the next year, one of them that we know quite well is Noble Energy, or Noble Corporation, I should say. Noble Corporation. Noble Energy is a different company. So Noble Corporation, they have come out of Chapter 11, and they've cleaned up their balance sheet, very little debt going forward. They've cleaned up their fleet. They really have the most technologically advanced fleet in the world. And the stock has trading at the ticker symbol now as a penny stock is NEBLQ, but once they get listed on an exchange, which is soon, we think there's going to be a nice pop. So this stock is trading at 2.5 cents. It's a, it's truly a penny stock. We see movement upward. And what's driving that movement is the pickup in demand that we've already seen, predominantly in Asia. Despite what a lot of people think, the fossil fuel industry is dead. You know, anything to do with oil and gas is going to be dead. Not true whatsoever. Huge demand. Look at what's happening with oil prices. Brent is trading at, was it 51, 52?
Yep.
I believe that we're going to see oil prices creep into the 60s. So I think that demand will continue to pick up. And that's going to help a lot of the names, not only in energy, but in energy-related fields. So I think a lot of the basic industries, the less exciting industries are going to be a lot of good opportunity there in 2021. And we're going to see maybe not necessarily a shift of growth and value, but we're going to see maybe more of a convergence to the mean.
Dan, what? How about the your entertainment stack, the one that's on the Toronto or Vancouver thing?
I think that continues to be a great story.
We have a listener called tweeted in on that one. The what's the name of it? It's the
Thunderbird.
Thunderbird, yeah. And it was
Thunderbird has done great. I mean, they are a small micro stock, so you can see a lot of volatility, but they have a lot of good things going on. What's particularly good about this company is that they have no debt and they're very proud of it. They're free cash flow positive and they're very proud of it. They have generated income in the last few years. They've taken the top-notch talent from, Lionsgate and Disney and Pixar, so they've built a really good team. Their focus is on growth. They have both the combination of animation and what they call factual. But what I see as a positive for them going forward in 2021 is that they have this pipeline of content, of new content coming in. And, I recently heard Netflix, I heard the CEO of Netflix talking, and, one of the questions that they asked him is, are people kind of tired of Netflix? Has everything been, has everybody watched everything already? Because there has not been a lot of new content coming up in the United States. And that's true, but these guys are in Canada, and so they have continued to produce. They have new content coming out. They've developed partnerships with a lot of the big names in the media business. So they have a lot of positive things going on, and I see this stock price continuing to grow. I would not be surprised if it doubles again in 2021. I think it's a nice, solid hold because it's in an industry that will do well regardless of the economic environment.
Did they name it after the... I believe it was the second casino before the Flamingo in Vegas, the Thunderbird.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if that's where they got the name. But
the guy had an old T-Bird car that he loves or something.
That's more of where it came from. Yeah, I think the CEO's dad was a car guy. So
really?
I think that's
cool.
More of where it came from.
Well, I love the early 60s ones, the ones that look like a wing. Those things are terrific.
They are. Yeah, any of the cars in that genre, 60s, even 70s, look like classic cars today.
I have a question. When you look at the individual companies, which you do, how do you not fall into the trap? And I'm not saying you did or anybody has, but if you're looking at the, looking at the saloons on the south side, say, and say, well, Matty Weber's got, he's got 15 different kinds of beers here, and he put a bunch of money in the place, and it looks pretty nice, and he's going to go up. I'm going to say his business is going to be up 10%. Or then we're going to say Lou's place, he went and got good-looking waitresses or something. He's going to go up 10%. But
you have a friend, one of them, you're friends with them.
Yeah, and so
comfortable there, yeah.
But when do you get to the point where, okay, I've got every saloon going up 10%, yet the population of the area went up 1%, and everybody got a 1% raise. Where exactly am I getting? I mean, that's the part with all these companies, gushing about how they're going to do next year. I don't see where the money comes from. And I also, I don't know if you know it or not, but last year on the Fast Money guys and all the other people on CNBC, the guys that know everything, right? Every single person said that this year was going to be the year for energy. And I'm going to say, it didn't work out exactly that way. But I mean, are we talking about Schlumberger, which is from down from 75 and it made it down to 15 or 16 and now it's up to 20? Do we have 75 in our future, or do we got 25 in our future? I mean, when you say we're bouncing back, are we going anywhere near where we, quote, used to be, or are we just going someplace upwards from here?
I think that's a good question, and I think we are going someplace, we're definitely going someplace upwards from here, and I think that's going to be reflected. You just look at what's happening with oil prices. That trend is continuing. The demand is continuing. You know, we will see global growth. One thing I will say about the way we've seen shutdowns and all that, and again, I think this is somewhat geographic because you and I had talked about this before. You're seeing more of that. You're seeing places closed in, say, Chicago. You know, if you're in New York, if you're in LA, if you're in the big cities, densely populated areas. But if you're in places like Florida, I mean, I ran an errand late in the afternoon yesterday, and all the bars are packed. You know, people are falling into the street, and they're not wearing masks. So, likewise, the businesses that have been running on the construction side in particular, construction has been strong. It's been very strong. I talked to a number of architects and a number of people who, engineers who are involved in the early stages of development. They are swamped. They're working overtime. So that all tells me that we're going to continue to see a lot of growth. We're going to continue to see growth in basic materials. We're going to see, you know, we're going to see growth in any raw material that's going to be supplied for the development of, whether it be housing or other manufacturing, or whether it be, as we've talked about, roads, you know, asphalt.
I think you have more knowledge than me in this area for sure. Can you kind of walk us through what, like, every $5 means to oil? I mean, obviously, at $25, everybody's in the crapo, right? I mean, but are we at 45? Are we now expansionary in some of these fields? At 50, are we going to try and get a pipeline from the basin in Texas to Louisiana? Are we going to? Because obviously, that's a big problem. Those guys get what, $10 or $12 less than the price we see at the pump. Right. I mean, where do we have to go to actually? Where do we have to go, but I don't think these guys are going to start building a pipeline because we're $60 for 1 week. I mean, they have to have some kind of an idea that we're going to be $60 for 20 years, because that's how long a pipe, you know, pipelines last forever probably. But I mean, what every 5 hours, what do you see ticking up? There was a map years ago, not that long ago, about the fracking, and as the price went up, I don't know if you saw, it was an interactive map, and it showed from, like, whatever year it was, every state was starting to get fracking. And there was Northeast Ohio, there was Southern Illinois, and all of a sudden, as the price went down, all these places went back to being farm country. I mean, they went way up, and everybody was fracking, and all of a sudden, now nobody. I mean, can you walk us through what every 5 hours means to the industry? Because I've lost track of that, because I know they've gotten way more efficient.
Yeah, so about a year ago, the pretty much the whole industry, you know, people on the E&P side, you know, the producers, the drillers, were all saying just a year ago that 50 would be the magic number, you know. So profitability at 50 or above, you know, incrementally you start getting, you know, as demand picks up, you're going to see the dollar price go from 50 to 55 to 60, and you're going to see profitability. So that was sort of the break point. And you could, for fracking, you could drop into the 40s, so you could go down to 45 or down to 40 and still see things operating efficiently and profitably. And so that was the break. Now, where it got confusing, and it's still somewhat confusing, is what is going to be the ultimate cost, you know, for shipping overseas. The good thing about some of the companies, including the two I mentioned earlier, is they're both diversified geographically, and they're seeing, you know, with fracking, we're talking strictly in the U.S. We're seeing concentration here. Purpose was to provide our own energy, which isn't a bad idea, but there's still energy being discovered all over the all over the world, and there are pockets that are going to do better than others. You know, kind of go back to the old, you know, think about the 80s in Texas, where there was all this, you know, movement up in, you know, in the world and in the economy there, just because all of a sudden they were developing and they were exploring and they were finding. And that is now happening in, like, Suriname, for example, is a place that's been hot. Vietnam was hot for a while. There are certain parts of the world, and in those parts of the world, the cost of transporting the energy is part of the factor. You know, again, where you are in that. Are you the E&P company that's doing work for Shell, or are you the driller doing work for Exxon, or are you the transporter, as you mentioned, say, pipelines? And they will be, you know, those companies will become more profitable, but they have to do two things. They have to clean up their balance sheets, because historically they've had a lot of debt. And that's why I used Noble Corporation, which is actually Noble Holdings, that's just come out as a good example. I think their stock is going to do quite well, because they're going to be one of the few energy companies with very little debt on their balance sheet and a really good fleet that's going to remain in demand. So I don't think the switch can be turned on and off when it comes to alternative energy. I like the concept of alternative energy. I like it even more, though, when it becomes profitable. So you have the double benefit of it being a profitable industry and keeping our air quality clean.
And what is the price? Where do we got to go to get, you know, four able-bodied people, which, you know, me 30 years ago, hopping in an old Winnebago and going out to North Dakota and making $40 an hour plus overtime, 80 hours a week, and coming back rich? I mean, we're nowhere near that, are we?
No, and actually, no, that's a good point, and that's another, North Dakota is a very good example of sort of that boom bust happening again, where there was this, you know, discovery that shot everything up, including housing prices. The same thing happened in Midland, Texas, you know, for a few years. A friend who's you know, one of the senior guys at one of the midstream companies there, and he was just talking about the outrageous prices for real estate and, you know, even groceries and things that you wouldn't expect in a place like Midland, Texas. So so I think, yes, those days are probably over, or it's going to take a while to get back there. But I think more so we're going to be shifting to other locations. So all of a sudden there's going to be a new discovery, or there's going to be a lot more activity in a particular area that's going to be cost effective. And that has already started happening. So, and I think that plays itself out. I don't know whether it means we're going to see a double in the price of every energy stock, but I think certain sectors, if you will, subsectors of energy are going to do fine. Are going to do well this year.
Did you guys ever have stock in the Fort Worth and Western? I think is the name of the company.
No.
Those guys, just to show you how screwed up, because we're kind of on a screw up the bureaucracy is, they were given all kinds of property to build a railroad from Fort Worth to, like, the Pacific back in God knows when. I think the railroad made it a total of, like, 2 miles or maybe a little longer. And that was it. They just kept the property. But it's totally horse bleep land. I mean, a few armadillos and a couple of lizards. Nobody really wanted it. Well, that's where the Permian Basin is at. So those guys are actually getting whatever fees. And I'll bet the only people that have the stock are people that tried to sell it and nobody wanted it.
Right. You know, I mean, and that's exactly what I'm saying. That's exactly what happens with energy. And I mentioned the one I would call it speculative play, which would be that Noble NEBLQ, which is trading over the counter, but will soon be trading on an exchange. And if you want a penny stock that I you know, I can't promise a double, but I can say I'm putting my money on it for 2.5 cents. And I wouldn't necessarily say put a lot of money on it, but just put a little on and watch how it performs.
What's the symbol again? Make sure everybody has
same
it.
Situation.
What's the symbol again?
The ticker symbol of the penny stock is NEBLQ. So it's Noble Holdings. It's called that when it emerged in November from a 3-month restructuring, and it was called Noble Corporation. Well, was called Noble Corporation, and now it's called Noble Holdings.
I got to ask you, Dan, we don't have that much time. We have some, a couple of minutes. What if all of a sudden the last 2 weeks, I almost get the feeling like couple of people are listening to the show and listening to me going like a knucklehead here about inflation and money supply, and all of a sudden you can't listen to 2 or 3 hours on any of these news stations without somebody mentioning it. If this becomes a howl instead of a whimper, what does it do to these interest rates and the bond prices and those kinds of things? If all of a sudden everybody decides that the reason why, you know, Home Depot is doing so good is because all they're doing is raising prices. I mean, well, not all, but I think McDonald's, what they're up, if say they're up 8% in same store sales, I'm going to say the McDonald's stuff is up 12% this year. Easy. I mean, if that becomes, you know, not just a couple of idiots like me talking about it, becomes part of the national chatter, what do you think it does to these interest rates long term?
Yeah, I mean, long term, I definitely think there's no question they go up. We definitely see rates go up long term. So you know, even talk about the 10-year, you know, that magic mark of 1%, just not being able to break through that, or just being able to break through it very, you know, maybe very momentarily. But I do believe we're going to see higher rates, but not. I think the time frame is what's important. I don't think we're going to see them in the next month or two. I think that's going to come over a period of time, and it's hard to say. You know, it's easy to get direction or timing. It's hard to get both. But in this case, I would say moderate increases are likely to happen. And again, that's why we are not investing. We do not recommend investing in pretty much anything longer than 5 years if you're in a higher quality fixed income investment. And, or even if you're in a high yield bond that trades, you know, like a double B, a really good rated double D bond, you know, don't buy the 10 years or the 20 years, because you are going to get whipsawed. You know, rates will go out. So look at some of these other ideas we've been discussing over time. Look at some of the preferred stocks, that have legs. Real estate, like I said, a little piece, you know, some, you know, investment in real estate REITs, that I think will continue to perform, well in here. But I think the time frame for seeing higher rates is long term. But one, you know, final thing I'll say on that is, just having been a bond guy from day one 35 years ago, I always look at the shape of the yield curve, and it's still positive. The times when I'd start getting concerned would be if we see more upward movement on the short end. I don't think we're going to see that anytime in the next couple of rounds here. So, like, let's say the first half of the year, I don't think we're going to see an inversion or a flattening.
I think you're right. The only other thing is that when the whiff hits of any kind of inflation, I went back and looked at the federal funds rates from the, should never have done this, Dan. And it said they were going up sometimes 3% and a quarter.
Yes.
Dan, we got a dash. Happy New Year, buddy. And, you've helped us out a lot this year. And I think you've given the listeners a lot of stuff to, really think about. And I like your predictions. I like them. And, I hope they did name it after the car and not the wine, the Thunderbird.
Yeah, well, appreciate that, and happy to help, and happy New Year to you, too.
All right, take care of yourself, buddy. SP Futures now down 250, and ASI Futures up 9. Only Matt Weber. Do you ever still drink that Thunderbird, Minnie?
I know what it is. I've never personally tried it.
I haven't either, but I don't think it's too good. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hayes, Mr. Merrill Weber on the board. I'm Mr. Frank Fay here in a second. So the jobless claims are only 787,000. That is awful high this far into the pandemic, wouldn't you say, Manny?
But beat the estimates.
Beat the estimates, yeah. Who are these estimators? Richard J. Daley. We beat the estimates. Any person who says that on TV, do you think any one of them could name who the estimator is?
That I don't know, though. But it said it was a consensus.
Consensus of all kinds of people we don't know.
Yes.
An average of the people we don't know. So Frank wants to know, before we let him on, how come Lou never names Republican crooks when he talks about politicians?
The lists are long on both sides.
Yes, they are. Anyway, S&P futures down 2, NASDAQ futures up 10, Dow futures down 29, so far slow. Over in Europe, we've got DAX on 42.3%, FTSE down 95, 1.5%, CAC down 48, that's 0.9%, so a little bit to the downside over there. Asia over the other way, Nikkei down 123.5%, but Shanghai up 58.72 is China stocks soar as the country says its factory activity expanded in December. I don't believe, whatever. Those guys, when they do good or when they do bad. Hang Seng up 84.3%. Bonds, 0.93, so it's up 0.004. The Bund, minus 0.57. So long these guys have been negative, I just can't even fathom that, but we all know that. Japan up positive 0.02%. Oil down 45 cents, 47.85. Brent down 53, 51.10. And everybody's saying this is going to 60 this year, the Brent. I don't know. They said that last year, but I think it might sneak up some, which is in general inflation. Natural gas up 7 cents, 249. RBOB unchanged at 140. We've got gold up 670 now, 1910 cents. Silver down a penny, 26.55. Maybe you got forced traffic, weather, sports, all kinds of sports this weekend, for God's sake.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a crash on the inbound Edens coming in from the northern suburbs. That's at Peterson and blocking the right lane. So a bit of a slowdown as you're heading south on the Edens I-94. So keep that in mind as you approach Peterson. But that's the only crash in the area. All quiet on the Kennedy. No issues on the Eisenhower in either direction. Same for the Stevenson. Ryan I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good, and Lakeshore Drive is quiet in both directions. Out in the western suburbs, we have a crash in Wheaton, Roosevelt Road at Winfield Road. There was an accident. But everything else is all quiet out there on New Year's Eve morning. Weather today, we'll see some sunshine later on, but right now it's cloudy and dreary out. It'll be cold all day, a high of just 31. Right now it's overcast and 25 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, clouds today and a high of 61. Right now it's clear and 40. In sports, quiet night last night for our pro teams. Bulls were off. They're at Washington this afternoon, 4 p.m. Chicago time tip-off against the Wizards. Suns were off. They're at the Utah Jazz tonight. That's a 6 p.m. Arizona time tip. There was some college hoops last night. Both teams lost, however. Notre Dame lost to Virginia, 66-57. DePaul was blown out at UConn, 82-61. Chief.
Whenever you say it was a quiet night, I'm reminded of the great music venue at Sheffield and Belmont, The Quiet Night.
The Quiet Night.
What a great place. I saw a lot of good bands there. Frank, how are you?
I saw Captain Beefheart there, among many others.
I saw
The Quiet Night.
I saw Seals and Croft the night before they launched the Summer Breeze album.
That's cool. Awesome.
So what's the word, Tom? Thunderbird? What's the price? It's 40 twice.
That's the only. I would say that my group denigrated into the Boone's Farm, but I don't think they ever made it down to Thunderbird.
Well, they didn't grow up in South Bend.
Well, the Boone's Farm was bad enough.
I had Boone's Farm also, and it was bad.
I once heard a description of Thunderbird as being the taste being reminiscent of wood alcohol, radiator coolant, and Kool-Aid.
The only thing I will say, and I couldn't possibly know this by first-hand experience, but the only thing I will say that Boone's Farm was good for is if my roommates, not me, my roommates were into the pot pretty heavy, right? And they had all these water pipes, which, you know, was better than smoking a J. If you put Boone's Farm in there instead of water, it actually served pretty well in that regard.
Hey, I never kicked over a bong and had it spill on the rug. Or a joint, I mean.
I
was going to say, you could with a bong.
I did easily with my size 14 feet. I have just an inkling where the toes are.
I would say the funniest, because I like the tip of glass, and I figured I found one vice I could control. I wasn't going to go too much further, so I never really got into the other stuff. But didn't stop other people around me. But I went to a party from the trading floor, and they were like, well, everybody in the trading floor was younger than me. I didn't get there until I was 30, so I kind of missed the clerk and everybody partying hardy thing, which was fine. I didn't need that. But I went to this party, and some guy was doing all these lines of cocaine on the coffee table, right? Well, in comes the German Shepherd. One whisk at a tail, there was no cocaine.
I bet he was pissed.
They were pissed, and I think they were going to start snorting a rug, but I was sitting there. I didn't want to burst out laughing because, you know, it was important to them. It wasn't to me, but I'm petting the dog. Good boy.
That's great.
Anyway, so, Frank, we have all kinds of stuff going on here. We have this inflation number starting to leak out from somebody other than me. Maybe there'll be more of a warning thing. We have it appears that our bureaucracy is once again screwing up. The vaccines aren't getting any place, it doesn't appear.
Surprise. No, not our bureaucracy. It's the governors.
Well, but why?
Even though they have no control over the Army, the best logistics program in the world.
But, Frank, how does somebody... We talked about this. I don't know if you were on, but I forget what day it was because I have it buried someplace. I'll never find it again. This Operation Warp Speed. And I'm going to say that, I'm not big on the government largesse, but this COVID thing is a pretty serious thing. I mean, there's people dying from it, for God's sake, the people that, you know, the people care about, that everybody cares about, and people losing their businesses, losing their wealth. I mean, this is about as bad as it gets. I mean, I don't think I've ever, if anybody ever thought I downplayed it, please don't feel that way because, I don't think I ever did. When people are dying, I try not to downplay anything. But, this Operation Warp Speed, just for a review, what it did was it gave six or seven companies, Pfizer, Johnson & Johnson, Moderna, AstraZeneca, and probably was Merck was in there, was Pfizer. I mean, Pfizer I mentioned, but there's like seven of them. And what it said was, if you got a handle on a vaccine you think is going to work, the government will pay you to start producing the thing like right now, even though it doesn't have FDA approval. And the total value of this was, I don't know, $10 billion maybe, something like that. I mean, it's a lot of money, but considering how much they're sprinkling the infield with, it's you know, it's a pimple on the ass of an elephant, basically. Never thought I'd say that about $10 billion, but, and, you know, it was fraught with whatever, and it actually was fairly well priced, I think, in some regards, in the sense that the companies like Moderna that I believe got money from the government for research got less per shot of the vaccine. So the vaccine is somewhere between, I'm going to say, $12 and $19 per shot that they're paying these guys. And every place was essentially, they were going to buy somewhere between 75 and, what, 125, with more to follow if you needed them, vaccines. So the idea was, if one of these things got approved on Thanksgiving Day, you could start shooting people in the arm or butt if they're good looking on Friday, right? I never really had too much bad to say about it, Frank. I don't think you did either. I don't think anybody else here. I mean, it was somewhat largesse if somebody really didn't have the right, you know, one. But by and large, both of these all these companies are coming out with something. But now, how is it that this was ongoing from like July? How is it that if we knew that on not a day's notice, but on a week's notice, we could have 100 million shots to give people? How could the infrastructure not be there to go do it? I mean,
because somebody decided to play golf rather than do just. It was.
But he's not controlling.
It just was a press release. It was a great idea. The initial thing was done well.
But Trump is not.
Trump credit for that.
But Trump is not.
No leadership beyond that.
Yeah, but Trump is not involved, I mean, at the level, or maybe should have been. Maybe that's the conversation. Trump is not.
Well, the federal government is not.
Well, but somehow or another, this thing has gotten, and we need Kevin because he's aware of the law that changed all this after Katrina. Somehow or another, I think it's the state of Illinois that is negotiating with Walgreens and CVS to be the official nursing home kind of place. Why can't, you know, Rush or University of Chicago or Silver Cross have a? We're going to go out and rent two vans and we're going to put two nurses in there and we're going to train them and they're going to have, you know, 2,000 of these things, and day one they're going to go to this nursing home, that nursing home, and they're going to knock off, you know, 2,000 old people a day.
Are you going to have a van that has a cooling system that can keep it at minus 100
degrees? Now,
you should
know, Frank, that if...
Well, that's the problem.
I know, but for the last 24 hours, it can be put in a regular refrigerator.
Okay.
But my point is...
I don't know why it was, because there was no real planning done.
But why does it always have to be some contract with somebody big? Why, we don't. You and I could learn how to give a shot in 20 minutes. Why can't we go out and do it, for God's sake?
Think of all the nurses that aren't working
yeah,
right
that's
now
my
because
point.
They work on elective surgery.
Yeah.
Every surgery center.
Yeah, that's exactly my point. Why can't we? It's always who's going to get the play. We can't let, you know, what if you and I and Maddie had some little, I can only imagine us with a chemical factory.
If we had a woman president, we would be doing fine. I mean, as of our company.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what if we came up with this cure or the vaccine 3 months before the other guys? We wouldn't get anywhere unless one of them bought us. I mean, we've got to get out of this mess. Meanwhile, the bureaucrats are going to tell people how many should be in a golf cart. We got nobody giving shots to people. Now, I won't say nobody. But, I mean, this should be right. How did this country, God's sake, ever win a world war in two continents in 3.5 years?
Well, we didn't put governors in charge of fighting the Germans or the Japanese.
That probably was a good idea. But I mean,
it was a great idea.
But I want
Wisconsin wouldn't have been with us.
Right. I don't want. I mean, I want our people to get these vaccines in this nursing home, and I want, if my mother was in there, I want to go visit her on Sunday. I'm impatient with this, and I don't have my mother isn't even in there. But if she was, I'd be like, what are you idiots doing? Where are the vaccines?
Oh, it takes a week to 10 days for the immunity to start.
Okay.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Well, you've got to be, we got to wait till after the second shot, probably. So 10 days. I don't want to hear that somebody can't go visit their mother 6 weeks from now. Because now all of a sudden I'm thinking you don't want to go visit. I can't go visit my mother because you gave her a shiner, right?
Right. I can't visit you.
Right. What's
I mean,
right?
Just give a shot.
Well, what makes you think?
You and I are 1B on the Illinois list. We should know, you know, and according to Kevin, according to our priority. Have you heard when you're getting your shot?
I shouldn't get one because I have the antibodies. I shouldn't get one for a year.
Well, I should. My wife definitely should.
Does that mean you're coming over?
When I have a shot. No, I'll come over and see you.
Where did you definitively hear that your antibodies last for a year? That's what I want to know.
I'm going to say...
Did you just make that up?
I
mean, you might be right, but
it might be
6 months, it might be 9 months, it might be 2 years.
It might be 3 months. What I did was I took the 2 years that they think...
I think you just made it up.
No, I'll tell you exactly how I got it. The word on SARS, which is a COVID sort of thing, is 2 years, so I basically cut it in half.
So you made it up.
Well, no, I'm not.
You could be right. I'm not saying.
I'm not.
But I'm saying I wouldn't.
At least he started with science.
Yes.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just throw that out there. Like a year is like a real number.
Well, what I'm saying, we're all going to know.
Could be 2 years.
Well, there's people that had it in March, right? Or in February.
Yeah.
And okay, we have. If all of a sudden, out of 1,000 people that had it in March, 900 of them are coming down with it again, we'll know. That hasn't happened yet, and that's 9 months ago.
True.
We don't know.
But so we don't know.
We
didn't do any testing in February or March.
So poor.
We know people in antibodies in March. There's some people.
Yeah, but we don't have a good number.
I'm trying to downplay it. I'm not. If I were to say it's going to last
my
2 years.
My point is that when they call your number, you should get the frickin' vaccine, for God's sake. Don't think that just because you're guessing that it's 12 months, it might be 6 months. You don't know.
Well,
that's
okay,
my point.
But my point is... If the vaccine works like it looks like they are, the vaccine does exactly what I already have.
We think.
And we hope.
Just get the shot, Tom.
Yeah.
You offered the shot, take it.
If you had this in September or whenever it was, October, and it's, let's say it lasts 9 months, okay, so you're good until July, and your shot becomes available in May, you're going to say
no.
I mean, that makes no sense.
No, what I want to have happen, and this is scientific, and I'm going to say somewhere it's happening. Pick 50 people like me, of different ages, both sexes, blah, 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 different nationalities. What you should do is, I want to get paid. You don't have to get paid because I don't mind getting stuck. What should happen is every month I should go in and somebody should chart how the antibodies are degrading.
Well, I'd like to think they're doing that.
I haven't heard. They're not doing it
with you specifically.
No, but I'm saying I haven't.
I'd like to think that they're absolutely tracking how long the antibodies
are. But if they were doing it since March or April, you would think someplace, somewhere. I'm not correct on everything I say here, and you know that, and I love it when you call me out on it, by the way.
Well, I just don't want you to make stuff up.
No, I understand it. What I'm saying is if they are, out of all the other crap we're hearing, why aren't we hearing that?
It's a great question.
Because we're spending $10 million on gender identity in Pakistan.
Right. But I should know. I should
that
know,
is why.
I should know right now, this thing's been around long enough, I should know to expect my antibodies to degrade 40% in 3 months or 50%, whatever the number is.
Maybe I agree.
The medical advisor was Dr. Atlas from Canada that was pushing for herd immunity. This is the problem. We have a dearth of leadership, the wrong leadership.
But I mean, we know
medicine.
We should be able to figure out. Kenny Polcari is on the show. Okay, he had his in what, May?
I think so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. So I had mine in. Where are we? We're in December. I had mine in November. I'm going to say a very small sample, since Kenny had all the antibodies in May. They should take his blood. Should take my blood and say, it looks like there's been a 10%, 20%, 80% degradation in the time between May and November. This is not that
they
difficult.
Should. Is not that anybody difficult. Doing it anywhere?
This is not that difficult.
Well, I'm willing to bet someone is doing it.
I'm with you there.
But we don't, obviously, they don't have conclusive results yet. That's my guess.
Well, but I mean, it should be.
But it would be nice to know on a quarterly basis, hey, we're seeing this sort of, like you said, reduction in antibodies by a certain percentage over a period of time. That way we can make a educated guess on how long they last. That would be nice.
But it's very important, Maddie, because we don't have enough vaccines. So if you show up at Maddie Weber's hospital, if you did this right, 2 days before, you would give everybody an antibody test. Let's assume you have 2,000 people working there, and you got 1,000 shots. Well, if 1,000
people... I heard this morning 20 million have been shipped and 2.5 million shots have been...
Yeah, that's my point. But what I'm saying is...
Well, I mean, it's not enough. We can't get it to the people.
Well, but even if you did, if you were rationing them somehow, why would you give a shot to somebody who had the disease 2 weeks ago?
You're right about that.
Because it slows down the process.
No, so you're both right. I think... Frank's right, because you're adding another step now. We already have two steps if we have to do it once and then again in 10 days, and we're trying to get this to 300 million people or whatever. And now you're adding a third step. But then you're right, too, that if we don't have enough, that we should ration it to the point where the people that need it the most, including people that don't have the antibodies, would be in that first group. I mean, you're both right. I don't know, you know, the best way to do this on a large scale, though.
Well, Kenny knows that he thinks he knows that he got it at the hospital and he picked up his daughter. I think I picked it up at the hospital when I went for a test. Now it appears that one of my favorite girls died yesterday, and in the hospital she ended up with COVID as well. And I'm going to say she got it in the hospital. Marianne.
Oh, see, that was the question of our college years.
Well, and I know
Marianne or Ginger.
Marianne or
now,
Ginger.
If your whiff is listening, Maddie, you better answer this question right, because wasn't she a farm girl from Iowa or something?
No, she's from western suburbs of Chicago.
Who, Marianne? Which she thought she was...
I'm from DuPage.
Oh, I thought you were talking about Jill.
No. But she's a regular girl. She's a regular girl, Marianne was.
Woman.
Marianne was a Hollywood frickin' actress that played a regular girl.
But she was a regular girl. She grew up on a farm or something, I think.
But if you're asking me if I choose Marianne or Ginger, I choose Marianne all
See,
day.
See, I would too.
Yeah.
I would too.
Me too.
Yeah.
But although she did say, I was reading last night, that she said they had all kinds of people that were doing the, casting for the part, and they said that once Ginger showed up, Tina Louise said she blew everybody else away. She was perfect. And said she was such a terrific lady. But anyway, I guess they all got along on the show. She said she couldn't wait to go to work. So everybody was... Has anybody left from that group? Is anybody still alive? I don't think so.
I don't know, but I did a quick Google search on Marianne versus Ginger, and apparently there's all kinds of poll results, and Marianne always wins.
Really?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, she had
Ginger is too expensive for me. I couldn't afford her.
They're both, I mean, obviously great, but something about the wholesomeness of Marianne people.
Oh,
really
she was
like.
She was so bubbly, it was scary. She didn't have a smile on her face. I can see you being
but the Ginger was taller. And yeah, if you're into that.
Oh yeah, well she'd been.
They're both. I mean, come on.
Like I said, but you looked at what she was wearing.
Talk
and you'd say,
about a theoretical discussion. Yeah. Among the
well, Frank's right. He couldn't afford the outfits Ginger was wearing. I could see you being the professor, maybe.
Yes.
Yeah. Anyway, what's your predictions for this year, Frank? How much have we?
This year is going to be over in about 16 hours. Is my prediction.
Next year, then.
Jesus. Hey, I'm the last guest of the year, and we'll be the first guest of next year.
That's right.
Yeah. No, I'm still worried about the part.
I think Biden's going to focus on delivery and
I hope so.
Just pull out all the stops if he does nothing else. I agree with you about inflation, and if we can get the vaccinations going, I think the economy will come back.
See, I am in April and May, I thought people in the restaurant business and a lot of other businesses had enough money to make it a few months. Now I'm absolutely convinced, Frank, that this is a week now. If we can get people ready to get back open a week sooner, it means a lot. It means it's like a month in April.
It means the world to these people.
It means the world.
And the people that work for them.
It's like, what is it, a week? Weeks have become months to me here. I mean, am I wrong or not? Plus, I don't know, what is this new plan, this PPP? Does anybody know what's in it? I mean, how much is a...
No, I've missed it.
But somebody who's already out of business is just toast, right? They're not getting any.
I have no idea about it.
Well, one of my favorite...
I mean, how much of the $2 trillion is going to individuals and small business?
A small amount. Well, last time it was, what, 20%, Manny?
Yeah, one of my favorite bars in Wrigleyville, the Nisei Lounge, which has been there forever on Sheffield, they just said that they got denied their grant that they applied for, They said that on Twitter, and they're going to have to close in January and February, and unless they can reopen in March, they might have to close permanently, which is bad. They've been there for
years. They can't have made an application for the new one yet. It's not even out yet.
I don't know. There's some sort of grant. I don't know if it was a state level or federal level. I'll have to look into it.
I think it was a state one.
Yeah, and they got denied, which I don't know.
Who was the other Wrigleyville place that closed for good this week? Was it a microbrew or something? Somebody.
Yeah. One of my favorite Italian restaurants on the north side closed, too, and they've been around forever.
Which one?
Caro Mio on Wilson.
Oh, yeah, I like that.
Great place.
You know who else closed on Willow Springs Road or Archery Avenue is Greco's. Frank, I don't know if you knew that or not.
And I heard the Flame is closed, too.
Yeah, oh yeah, Flame's closed.
So we got 30 seconds left. Real quick, Notre Dame game. What do you think? Can they keep it close? Can they upset?
Can I ask you a question? I've never seen a money line like this. You got to bet, if you bet 100 on an Irish, you win 660, but you got to spend $1,250 to win 100 on the. You ever seen a spread $600 on the money line?
Not very often. That's weird.
I'm with that 4-day. Don't bet. Buy Apple.
Okay. I think they might cover 25. I think you got to take Clemson.
If you think Notre Dame could somehow keep it close and get lucky and win, plus 800, that is quite the money line.
Well, Ohio State, I don't see how they're only 7.5-point dogs at Clemson.
Yeah, well, you can put a bet down in Illinois. It's legal.
What do you think would be the line the Irish played to Ohio State?
I think that would be pretty close.
Well, then
I think that would be a great game.
It would be, yeah.
I would put
Notre Dame favored by like 2.
Is there any chance of that happening?
They both win.
So the answer is yes.
There is a chance.
What's 1 in 100 times 1 in 50? Anyway.
Hey, come on. We've made a lot of money by not saying that could never happen.
Well, as Howard Cosell said, that's why you play the game. Frank, thank you very much. Happy New Year. Maddie, good job again.
Happy New Year to both of you.
Maddie, it's becoming a lot of years, buddy.
That's right.
And I don't get tired of it doing it with you, I'll say that. SP Futures down 2, NASA Futures up 5.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.